evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 30th, 2017. A U.S. travel ban on people coming from Sudan and other countries sends shockwaves in the U.S. and abroad.
I think this decision is unjust to Sudanese citizens and Muslims. If America is to protect human rights, it should take our rights into consideration, too.
And South Sudanese displaced by cattle raiders say they have no food, shelter or medicine.
Of course, when they came, some people, they have a problem of swelling of the leg because they were not running direct to the wall. Some of them hid themselves in the bush, and meanwhile, in the night, they try to come back to the town. And for children, because of hunger, and their health was not good.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. American airport authorities began implementing President Donald Trump's executive order over the weekend aimed at preventing terrorists from entering the U.S. Several hundred people were detained at entry ports, sparking a wave of protest at home and abroad. The executive order, singling out seven Muslim-majority countries, Iraq, Syria, Iran, Yemen, Sudan, and Libya, and Somalia, has baffled citizens in those countries. VOA Zletka Hoik has more.
Some passengers from the targeted countries were not allowed to board U.S.-bound flights. Syrian passport holder Nail Zain was barred from boarding a plane for Los Angeles at Istanbul's Ataturk Airport on Sunday. His two-day-old U.S. visa did not make a difference.
My wife and my son in the United States, my son has American nationality, and we are waiting this moment since 2 years. Finally, when we got the chance, they prevent us as Syrian passport holder to travel.
Sudanese citizen Fatma Abul Qasim had to return to Sudan after airport authorities in Qatar prevented her from flying to the United States.
I think this decision is unjust to Sudanese citizens and Muslims. If America is to protect human rights, it should take our rights into consideration, too.
Lawful permanent U.S. residents or green card holders from the seven countries are not included in the temporary ban. But those who happen to be overseas when the order was issued now fear they won't be able to return to the United States.
My niece has just come back from America for vacation. She was a translator with the Americans in Iraq, and she has been granted refuge in America. Now she is in an impasse as to whether she will be allowed to go back to America or be rejected under the pretext of terrorism.
The Speaker of the Iranian Parliament on Sunday called the travel ban racist.
Putting Iran's name on this list on the pretext of concerns over acts of terrorism sounds more like a joke. It is not a secret that Iran stood up to terrorists on its own in recent years, and some other countries joined it later on.
In Israel, Iran's longtime adversary, some protesters gathered outside the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv Sunday to voice their opposition to the executive order signed by President Trump. The White House has defended its implementation of the travel ban, saying that 325,000 travelers entered the United States on Saturday, and only 109 of them were temporarily detained. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The Sudan government says it is disappointed by President Donald Trump's executive order temporarily banning refugees and travelers from seven Muslim-majority countries, including Sudan. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says Sudan was looking forward to normalizing relations with the U.S., especially after President Barack Obama earlier lifted some U.S. sanctions against Sudan shortly before he left office. Bilal tells VOA's James Batty, Sudan has not been involved in any terrorist activities to harm Americans.
Actually, we are feeling very sorry for that because we were optimistic that after 20 years of sanctions, which have been lifted, and we were looking forward for improving and normalizing our relations with the United States, and this is actually for us was almost a setback. And we are very sorry for that because everybody knows that no Sudanese have been involved in any sort of terroristic action or harm the people of America. And we are against actually this action done by extremists. We think this resolution now is not actually favoring the good conducive environment that has been actually felt by our country after lifting of the sanctions. Anyway, we think this is almost not a good thing for us. But he said this will be for 3 months. We hope that after the 3 months, it can be lifted and it can be reviewed. Because everybody now in the whole world now, they are very astonished for such actions. And we don't know how this can protect America. This will damage America more than anything else, because it will make America almost isolated from the world. And America is everybody looking forward to for her lore. Role in the world, because it is the first country, America has a role to do for humanity.
You mentioned Minister President Barack Obama. Before he left office, he lifted some sanctions on your government. But the fact that your country was listed as one of the states of sponsors of terror, that was not lifted. Do you think that is why President Trump had your country on there?
I think this is why, because no other reason to be involved was such countries like Somalia, Libya, Iraq, because these countries know that there is no state, actually. Sudan is a stable country with very, actually, good role for the neighbors and all relations with other countries. I think this may be the reason. But anyway, we are looking forward for improvement and for review of maybe in the future.
When I spoke with you earlier this month, you described President Trump as a businessman. You were hoping that relations between the U.S. and Sudan would improve, and that he should see relations with Sudan as being very crucial to Africa relations.
We thought that, actually, and we think that Sudan is very important. If any thought of good relations with Africa and with the stability in our neighboring countries, especially the South Sudan and other areas of conflict like Libya and these things, Sudan has a role to do. I think President Trump should revise his resolution and look forward, first of all, to lift Sudan from the country sponsoring terrorism, because I think this is the reason why he included Sudan with the certain countries. And if this had been done, there is no reason for us to be included with other countries.
Has your government been cooperating with the United States in the fight against ISIL and other terrorist groups?
For sure. For sure, they know this. They know this, and we have good, actually, intelligence cooperation in this area. And the CIA knows that, and they have been engaged with our intelligence here. And there is some sort of information revision between the two countries. And this is going on for maybe years now. And they are very well know that Sudan is very cooperative. And Sudan, one of the countries, the traffic and the movement of refugees and displacement going through Sudan and to Europe, and are doing a big cooperation in this area. We are stopping last week, maybe we stopped about 150 of these. So they know the role of Sudan very well.
That's Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal speaking to VOA's James Batty from Khartoum earlier yesterday. The UN Refugee Agency says Syrian and other refugees pose no national threat to the United States. The UNHCR and other UN agencies and human rights advocates are urging the United States to reconsider its ban on immigration. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says there is no merit to a claim by U.S. President Donald Trump that Syrian refugees threaten national security and should be banned from entering the United States. On Friday, President Trump signed an executive order denying entry of citizens from 7 predominantly Muslim countries into the United States for 90 days. The new policy also calls for the suspension of all refugee resettlement to the U.S. for 120 days and an indefinite ban on Syrian refugees from entering the country. UNHCR spokeswoman Vanina Mestrachi rejects assertions that Syrian refugees are terrorists. She says refugees are victims of terrorists, and those proposed for resettlement are among the most vulnerable people on Earth. They include women and children, people with disabilities, and serious medical needs. She tells VOA that refugees undergo a very rigorous screening process before they are admitted to the U.S. for resettlement.
I think it's fair to say that refugees coming into the United States to be resettled are some of the most vetted individuals entering the United States.
In a recent interview with U.S. media, President Trump said the U.S. has taken in tens of thousands of people without knowing anything about them, adding that they were not vetted. The president is calling for extreme vetting of immigrants coming to the U.S. Mistrachi says the UNHCR carefully screens all refugees proposed for resettlement in the United States and more than 30 other countries. She says the U.S. decides which refugees it will accept, a process that can take 2 years.
There are many, many layers to it within the U.S. system. And I think 8 federal government agencies are involved. There's 6 different security databases, 5 separate background checks, all done by the U.S.
The Office of Refugee Resettlement reports 14,333 Syrian refugees have been resettled in the U.S. since 2012. This number pales in comparison to other countries such as Turkey, which currently hosts nearly 3 million Syrian refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, internally displaced people in Wau say they need food and medicine. That story is coming up next after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could work in any profession, what would you choose to do?
I would be bringing peace among the people, coordinating people, and making a resolution to any conflict among the people.
Social science, I would choose that, because with social science you get to interact with different kind of people. It doesn't depend on class.
I would be a lawyer. Yeah, I think it's very interesting. They have a section where they help out people who can't afford them. Yeah, I think I would really love to do that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Thousands of people who fled their homes during last week's raid by cattle raiders in Wau say they are in dire need of food, shelter, and medicine. The internally displaced persons say more than 3,000 people are camping at Jebel Tik, about 3 kilometers from Wau town. The IDPs, mostly women and children, say the attackers looted their belongings and burned down their houses, forcing them to flee without any of their belongings. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
45-year-old Asunta Buklam says a group of armed men came to her village Wadhalel and accused everyone of being rebel supporters. Speaking in Arabic, Abuk says the armed men then began shooting many youth, and that is when she fled.
Actually, we don't know the reason why they attacked us. Now we are suffering with our children. We left the blind and elderly people behind because we could not pick them. I don't know if they are still alive. Now we are here with our children and we have nothing to eat. We don't have food.
28-year-old Wol Ucheng fled the violence from the Utura area of Rojrodong County. Speaking in Arabic, Ucheng says Even though the villagers harvested food recently, they could not carry it while fleeing the violence. He says his family is suffering without any food to eat. Speaking in Arabic, Ucheng says the attackers burned down his house.
Now as we are here, all our belongings have gone. They have looted our recently harvested sorghum and also have gone away with our chickens, goats and many other things. We don't know any reason for this attack, but now we are paying the price.
Both Ucheng and Abuk are appealing to humanitarian organizations in Wau to provide displaced villagers with food, medicine and shelter. They say they will not return to their village unless the government guarantees their safety and security. Speaking in Arabic, James Moses Ugodo, the Roydon County Executive Director, confirms that 4 civilians were killed and houses were burned down during the attack.
Houses were burned and harvested crops were looted and the situation is now dire. Now these civilians are here and they did not carry anything with them and have nothing to eat. We want to make sure that they're safe here at Jebel Tik.
Father Andrea Naro, the Catholic parish priest of Holy Family in Nazareth, confirms that since Friday, more than 300 families have sought shelter in his church compound. Father Naro says some of the displaced walked more than 20 miles and spent days without food.
Of course, when they came, some people, they have a problem of swelling of the leg because they were not running directly at Wau. Some of them hid themselves in the bush, and meanwhile, in the night, they try to come back to the town. And for children, because of hunger and their health was not good.
Wau State Governor Andrea Mayora Cho vows to improve security in Roydon County so that IDPs can return to their homes. Governor Cho spoke in Arabic directly to the IDPs at Jebel Tik on Friday.
The situation that happens to you, we are aware of it. Your state government is looking forward to solving this issue. We have sent some troops there. They are not there to divide you, but they are going to protect you and your property.
Cho says he is disappointed to see the villagers settling under the trees. He warned that if they do not return home, the thieves will loot more properties in their villages. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Today we start the first installment of a 4-part series on South Sudanese who were in Khartoum before their country gained independence in 2011. Thousands of these families have been living in camps in the suburbs of Khartoum since that time, when more than 1 million South Sudanese took advantage of the voluntary repatriation program, which returned people of South Sudan origin to their new country. But more than 5 years after South Sudan's independence, many South Sudanese are still stuck in camps outside Khartoum, living under harsh conditions. They tell reporter Nabil Biagio they are denied the opportunity to practice their cultural traditions.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, estimates that more than 300,000 South Sudanese citizens have crossed into Sudan after fighting broke out in Juba in December 2013. It says another wave of South Sudanese refugees entered Sudan after the surge in fighting in July. Noriko Yoshida is UNHCR representative in Sudan.
Those people, you know, who were here before the secession and have not gone back to the South Sudan, were not able to go back to South Sudan, we need to add this number. But I must say that, you know, this number, you know, we really do not have the comprehensive figure of this group of the South Sudanese.
Tens of thousands of South Sudanese had already been sheltering at camps outside of Khartoum in Jebel Awliya, Soba, Durman and Haj Yusuf when the fighting erupted in Juba in July. UNHCR says the influx of South Sudanese into Sudan has put a huge strain on the humanitarian community's ability to deliver essential services to poor families living in the camps. Al-Amin Agai is a resident of Sudan Jadid camp in Bantiu in Jebel Awliya, just south of Khartoum. His camp was originally built in 2011 in a shajara, then in 2015 it was transferred to Jebel Awliya, where he now resides. Speaking in Arabic, Agai says life at the camp is
tough.
Our stay here at the camp for all these years has ruined much of our life. Our kids don't get education, and we have no proper access to health care. Even our traditions as South Sudanese, especially as the Dinka, regarding weddings and funerals and things have been halted. My daughter was only 5 when we came here to this camp, and now she's 12.
Lydia Leon Taban is a resident of Andalus camp in Jebel Awliya and a mother of 7 children. Speaking in Arabic, she says it has been 8 years since she has lived in a proper home.
I stayed with my children in Andalus camp for 3 years, then moved over here where we have been staying for 5 years. Our life here is not very bad. Sudanese don't treat us badly, but our own South Sudanese community doesn't care much about us. They don't come to our aid when we need them. We're totally on our own here. We live off what we can do with our own hands.
Deng Thong is another resident of Sudan Jadid. Speaking Arabic, he says, he and his colleagues face humiliation and ill treatment by police officers on a day-to-day basis.
One of the problems we face here is the police raid. They just storm in any time of the day or night, arrest people or just search their places. Sometimes they do beat us up when they find alcohol in our possession. I think it is very inappropriate and invasive for the police to enter our places at 4 a.m. in the morning and toss us out of bed just because they suspect we might have alcohol.
Boutros Outojoual Moudiria is a retired South Sudanese civil servant who lives in Andalus camp. He says he resorted to the open camps after he was laid off in late 2011. Since then, Moudiria says in Arabic, he has had to make do on a meager pension.
It is very hard to find work for old people like me and for youth as well. Most of our young men are jobless and are resorting to drinking alcohol and engaging in destructive activities out of frustration. We ask the humanitarian community to extend a helping hand to us because we are really in need and we have no one to turn to.
Residents at Jebel Awliya camp say UNHCR has provided them with tents and food items when they arrived in 2015. But since then, they say they have been forced to live on their own. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Leaders from around the African continent have been meeting in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, for a week. VOA's Anita Paul reports on the issues these leaders are discussing.
As is often the case at African Union summits, the ambitious official theme this year, it is harnessing the demographic dividend through investments in youth, is not the main draw. Africa's messy, exciting politics is. This summit is an African debut of sorts for Gambia's new president, Adama Barrow, triumphant from a bruising election that nearly ended in bloodshed after the longtime president initially refused to vacate the seat he had held for 22 years. On the other end of the spectrum, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe has attended every AU summit in recent memory. He has ruled since 1980, and recently announced he would stand again in the next elections, at age 94. The continent has longer simmering political issues that leaders may hash out behind closed doors, breaking a political impasse to schedule overdue elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Rwandan president's decision to change the constitution to run for a third presidential term this year. On Sunday, the leaders met for a retreat, safely ensconced from the public and journalists by a cordon of security at AU headquarters. The agenda said the leaders were discussing reform of the AU. Liberian Minister of Youth and Sports, Sa Charles Ntou, was in many of the off-limits meetings and spoke to VOA on the sidelines of the summit. He acknowledged the leaders' private meetings do not send a message of openness and transparent governance to the African people they serve.
I wish I could come out and say it, you know, out here. But I think there are things that they have closed meetings because they want to, you know, like roll out whatever the outcomes are at the time that they decide, you know. So I can't really tell you.
Leaders will make a secret vote to choose their pick for the new head of the African Union Commission after they failed to choose a successor for Chairwoman Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma at the last summit 6 months ago. Former AU Peace and Security Commissioner Saeed Jinnit spoke to VOA on the sidelines of the summit. He no longer works for the African Union, and his issue, as UN Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region, is not officially on the agenda. But he came because he said many of the important issues happen on the sidelines.
But as especially VOA, I came here because I took advantage of the summit to have a meeting of the guarantors of the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework, which is an agreement which was signed by the countries of the Great Lakes, plus South Africa and a few others, in 2013, essentially to promote peace, security, cooperation and development in the Great Lakes because of the history of the Great Lakes, as you know, the genocide in Rwanda, the wars in the DRC, and the crisis, successive crisis in Burundi.
The heads of state began official meetings Monday in an opening ceremony that will pay homage to their official theme. But only they know how much of their business has been hashed out in private meetings beforehand. Anita Powell, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The Sudan government says it's disappointed in U.S. President Donald Trump's executive order temporarily banning refugees and travelers from seven Muslim-majority countries, including Syria and Sudan. Information Minister Ahmad Bilal of Sudan says he was looking forward to normalizing relations with the U.S., especially after President Barack Obama earlier lifted some U.S. sanctions against Sudan before he left office. Several hundred people were detained trying to enter U.S. airports on Saturday and Sunday, sparking a wave of protests at home and abroad. Mr. Trump's executive order singled out those seven majority countries and has baffled citizens in the countries. And finally, local leaders say thousands of people who fled their homes in Wau State after last week's raid by cattle keepers are in desperate need of food, shelter and medicine. They say 3,000 IDPs are camping at Jebel Tik, about 3 kilometers from Wau Town. Most are women and children. They say the attackers looted their belongings and burned down their homes, forcing them to flee without any of their belongings, while authorities are urging the IDPs to return home, and they promise to provide increased security to prevent more attacks. Ucheng says the attackers burned down his house. Both Ucheng and another resident are appealing to humanitarian organizations in Wau to provide displaced villagers with the food, medicine, and shelter they need. They say they will not return to their villages unless the government guarantees their safety and security. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with a song and a guide by Crazy Fox.
Me can't be a refugee in my own country. I'm a mashi, I'm a man, I'm a big people, I'm a guy. Salati no tala, suppose in a fox and a guy. I'm a mashi, I'm a man, I'm a big people, I'm a guy. Salati no tala, suppose in a fox and a guy. I'm a asma gali, said that dollar. Someone please come give me a helping hand. It's only this trouble could I get me by me yard. Big up to all them patches them name. Rastaman salute all the army them name. Lil J, me be there rest in peace. Ay, 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 ay. Yeah, Rastafari, he might have a place to eat.
We have been listening to Crazy Fox with the song Anna Guide. My name is John Tanza. I'm in Washington here. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm a miss kindy, I'm a bit far at the end.